Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan and I will be discussing the series that we just concluded. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Nathan. You spent the last year studying the book of Judges. What would you say are some of the important takeaway lessons from the book of Judges?
Well, Bob, one lesson I think that's very important is the faith that these various judges showed. And we saw that through different ones of the judges that were highlighted in the book. For example, we saw Barak, who saved Israel from a very superior army when God called him to do that and believed God's message to him through his prophet Deborah. We saw that in the man Gideon, who, though he started out being kind of cowardly, ultimately he grew in faith and in his trust in God until God told him to defeat this huge army and said, "You have too many soldiers, send them all home except for 300. And Gideon did that, and with those 300 soldiers, defeated the enemy, first through a clever strategy, but then, as we saw later, just playing through fighting a much superior force with his 300, and God gave them the victory. Then we saw the faith of the man Jephthah, who, despite the fact that he had very questionable parentage, still he was willing to forgive his family who kicked him out and returned to save the Lord's land from those who wanted to steal it, and reviewed to them the history of Israel, proving to them that Israel had been given the land by God and really deserved to have it, and showed his knowledge of their history through God's word. And then even the faith of Samson, that God could deliver him no matter what the situation. We saw throughout the book, just the example of the faith these judges had.
Yes, Nathan, faith, definitely a major lesson from the book of Judges. Yet many have a problem when looking at a man like Samson, who lived a promiscuous life, and he did have a pretty bad end. What would you say to people that have questions like that?
Well, it's understandable people question that, Bob. I mean, you have to admit, Samson never seemed to want to marry one of God's young women. He was only interested in the bad girl Philistines who didn't worship the Lord, which wasn't good and wasn't right according to God's law. But I think what we have to look at for Samson's faith is his utter confidence in God's word to him. Remember, God had said that Samson was going to be his deliverer. And so Samson runs into a lion that's attacking him, and he says, "Well, the Lord has said I'm going to be his deliverer, so this lion won't be able to kill me, so I'll just fight the lion with my bare hands, and God will save me," and he did. Or even he's facing an army. He says, "Well, I'm one man, I'm facing an army, but God says I'm going to be the deliverer, so God will allow me to defeat this army," and he does. Or he's trapped in a city, and the gates are closed and locked, and he says, "Well, God says I'm going to be deliverer, so I'm just going to walk up to these city gates, far too big for a human being to physically lift, and I'm just going to pick them up and walk away with them," and he does. So he just has utter confidence in God's promise to him. And Samson is listed in Hebrews 11, which a lot of people know is kind of the hall of fame of faith. And it talks about in verses 32 through 34, "And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah." Of course, those are some of our judges. "Also of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms." Then a little later it says, "Escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens." And I think a lot of those things are pretty much describing Samson. And even out of weakness were made strong. You know, when people picture Samson, he's so known for his strength that I think they tend to draw him like this huge, muscly He-Man type of character. But the thing is, a lot of the feats of strength Samson did were not humanly possible. It doesn't matter how big your muscles are. So it's clear the Lord was empowering him, so it wasn't really necessary that he have big muscles at all. And I pointed out when we were studying, for all we know, Samson was a little weakling, string beanie type of guy, and yet God gave him this incredible strength. So his weakness was turned to strength. And so Samson's faith is shown, yes. I mean, he didn't really believe some of God's laws in Scripture. He should have, about who he should marry and about morality. But at the same time, where we see Samson's faith is that again and again, he recklessly staked his life on God's promises to him. Mm-hmm. And time and again, he does that. And time and again, God comes through. And so there's the example of faith. And so I think we should follow that example. And of course, maybe not the morality example.
Yeah, Samson is definitely an amazing example of utter confidence in God's ability to save him. Nathan, I agree that those are some great lessons from the book of Judges, yet there are also some things that people struggle with in this book. Can you talk about some of those things?
Well, as we talked about, as we went through, some people struggle with the violence in the book. And we have to understand that Israel were God's people, and oftentimes they were fighting for their freedom and their very existence. Israel was surrounded by nations that didn't really like them very much, and it seems the only time that any of the nations around them were their allies is when they conquered them and forced them to be. And generally, the nations around Israel hated them and wanted to wipe them out. And we saw many times, for example, Gideon, when he saved them, it was from a nation that was just coming in and not just stealing their crops, as if they wanted to steal their wealth from them, just burning down their fields. They were purposely just trying to starve Israel to wipe them out, to wipe them off the face of the earth. And so we look at it and we're far removed from the dangers they faced, and we can feel shocked at the violence. Well, we don't realize how high the stakes were. And often God gave Israel the power to destroy their enemies when their enemies are trying to destroy them. So I think we should see in this his love and care to protect and deliver his people. Whereas some people, they just look at the violence he had to do in order to accomplish that and don't realize that really that was him saving them from people who were trying to oppress them or destroy them, wipe them out. And so it was his love and care for his people that we should see there.
Yeah, it's important to understand the violence in the book of Judges is must be kept in its context, right, Nathan?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So what other problems do you think someone might have when they read the book of Judges?
Well, Bob, one big one I would say is Jephthah's vow. And this fact, he made this vow, the first thing out of my house, I will give it to the Lord and offer it as a burnt offering. And then the first thing out of his house was his daughter. And a lot of people think that implies that he sacrificed his daughter, human sacrifice, to fulfill his vow.
Wow, well, that is definitely a big problem, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. But as we discussed as we went through the book of Judges, what was Judges' vow actually? And we talked about the fact that when he says, I will give it to the Lord and I will offer it as a burnt offering, well, the particle in Hebrew that they've translated and there in English could also be translated as or. It's an either-or proposition, in other words. In other words, he says, I will give it to the Lord, or I will offer it as a burnt offering. And Samson must have known that the first thing out of his house could be something that wasn't appropriate to offer as an offering. I mean, suppose it had been a dog the first thing out of his house. Well, dogs were unclean, definitely not supposed to be offered as a burnt offering and so forth. So I think what he knew that. I think what he actually was saying was, I'll give it to the Lord, and if it's appropriate as a burnt offering, I'll offer it as a burnt offering. But of course, if it wasn't appropriate, he wouldn't do it. Well, if there's anything that wasn't appropriate for a burnt offering, it would be a human being. I mean, clearly human sacrifices were not allowed under God's law. So I don't think for a moment that Jephthah was going to offer his daughter as a burnt offering. He said, or, in the first part of his vow was, I will give it to the Lord. And I think that's what he did with his daughter. What does that mean? Well, I think the passage shows us what that means. He basically dedicated his daughter to be a perpetual virgin. She was never married, and she was dedicated to the Lord. So that's what he did with her. He didn't offer her as a burnt offering.
Hmm. Well, that makes so much sense. Yeah, I remember you talking about a deeper lesson in Jephthah's vow that I thought was very important. Could you expound on that a little bit for us?
Well, absolutely. I think Jephthah made this vow because he wanted the Lord to save Israel from their enemies. And he says, Lord, look at my house, and whatever in my house you think is appropriate to pay you back for saving Israel, I'll give it to you. And he thought that was a great vow. But the thing is, the reason Israel was being oppressed and the reason Israel was in trouble was because of their sin, because they had disobeyed the Lord and worshiped other gods. That was why they were being oppressed. So in order to save Israel, God had to forgive their sins. Well, how could God do that? Well, it goes back to the fact that more than 1,000 years, of course, after Jephthah, Jesus Christ died on the cross, and that's how he took care of Israel's sin. So Jephthah has no idea, but basically what he's telling the Lord is, pick the one thing in my house that you think would be an appropriate gift to pay you back for the gift of your son. Well, he had no idea that's what he was saying, but I think the Lord honored that, and he looked at his house, and what was the one thing in his house that could possibly be worthy to be compared to the gift of God's son? Well, of course, that was Jephthah's only daughter. So I think Jephthah asked the Lord to pick whatever he wanted in his house, and God did. And his daughter was the only thing that was appropriate to pay him back, because the reason God could save Israel was because God gave the gift of his son. And the only thing worthy to be compared to that was Jephthah's only child. So I think there's that lesson there, that What did it take for God to save Israel? Well, it would be the gift of his only begotten son.
Oh, that's a great lesson, and what a beautiful truth. And this is just not what many think of. This is not an ugly story. It's a beautiful one, really. Speaking of ugly, though, when we started Judges, I remember you mentioned that the last chapters of the book are, in your own words, Nathan, just nasty. So would you mind reviewing just a little bit for our listeners just what those chapters are about?
Well, sure, Bob. Those last five chapters, they start out with this man, Micah, who is just the ultimate example of a hypocrite. Everything he does is hypocritical as he sets up in his home and a temple for idols and worshiping idols and yet saying all the time that he's worshiping the Lord. Then in the next chapter, we have this hypocritical tribe of Dan, or really it's a family in the tribe of Dan, who decides that it's too hard to conquer the land the Lord gave them to conquer. And instead, they search out an easy city to conquer in one of the other tribes' lands, go there and conquer it, and name it Dan as if in open defiance of where the Lord said Dan was supposed to be. And then on the way, they encounter Micah and his idols, and they say, hey, this is great, and they steal Micah's idols for themselves. Well, then the next chapter talks about this man, a Levite, the Lord's special religious tribe, who has a concubine, a slave wife, and he's such a bad husband, she runs away from him. But he goes to retrieve her from her father's house, bring her back. Well, on the way back, he stops at Gibeah, and the people of Gibeah have become basically just as wicked as Sodom and Gomorrah, and they come to the house and demand this Levite be thrown out to them so they could have intercourse with him. Well, our brave hero, the Levite, throws his wife or his concubine out instead. So they abuse her till morning, and she dies. And he's so mad, well, I lost a perfectly good slave wife, that he cuts her in pieces, sends her out to Israel, and says, we have to do something about this moral corruption. And Israel all gets together. They're furious. They want to wipe out the men of Gibeah, except for the tribe of Benjamin. Gibeah belonged to Benjamin. And they said, hey, we got to protect our tribe. So they fought for Gibeah. There's this terrible civil war. Israel, after a couple losses, wins. And they decide to systematically wipe Benjamin out, man, woman, and child, for siding with Gibeah. And they do until there's only 600 men left. And then they regret it. Oh, we don't want a missing tribe. How can we get wives for these men who are left? So they find a city that hadn't come to their convocation, and they made a vow about that. So they go, more violence, wipe that city out, take the girls and give them to Benjamin. And it's just quite a mess.
Yeah. Well, Nathan, this sounds like just that, a mess. I think most of us wonder why God includes the stories like this in our Bible. What lessons are we supposed to get out of these kinds of stories?
Well, we understand that Judges is really talking about the decline of Israel from when they came into the land, and yet they mixed among the Canaanites, and they declined until we get to David, who finally followed God's command, wiped the Canaanites out, and brought about Israel's golden age. So Judges is about Israel's decline. And the first 16 chapters talks about the judges, but there's the governmental decline of Israel. We start out with some pretty good judges, but by the time we get to the end, we get to Jephthah, a man who, even though he's a godly man, I mean, his mother's a prostitute. That's not so great. And then Samson, who, in spite of the fact that he is, yes, a great man of faith and his utter confidence in the Lord, has no morality at all when it comes to women. So there's the governmental decline. Well, then these last chapters with Micah and the tribe of Dan, we get into the religious decline of Israel, accepting idolatry. And then with the Levite and his concubine, we get into the moral decline of Israel, where their morals are just going down the tubes.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So how does the destruction of Benjamin fit into that?
Well, really, the theme of these last five chapters of Judges is found several times throughout in a verse where it says, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And this was true, but the fact is there was supposed to be a king in Israel. That was the Lord. And it was when Israel ignored the Lord as their king and didn't treat him as their king that these things happened. And we saw that when this terrible thing happened with the Levite's concubine, I mean, Israel didn't really consult the Lord. First of all, they didn't listen to him when he said, wipe out the Canaanites. God said, these Canaanites are wicked. They deserve to die. You should wipe them out. If you live among them, if you don't wipe them out, they'll corrupt you and you'll become as bad as they were. But for Israel, you know, it's hard to go through and systematically wipe out a people. It was just too hard. They failed to do it. Well, then sure enough, Benjamin, or some people in Benjamin anyway, became just as wicked as the Canaanites. And then Israel was all incensed and they went and wiped Benjamin out. You know, they thought it was too hard when it was Canaan, but when it was their brother Benjamin, they don't seem to think it's too hard and wipe them out. Well, then after they've almost finished wiping them out, then they suddenly regret it and want to restore them. Well, and yet we see all through here, God is barely consulted. I mean, they basically go to him after they've decided to attack Benjamin. They go to him and say, who should attack them first? Not should we attack them, what should we do, but who should attack them first? You know, this is your little corner of it, God. So they aren't treating him like their king at all. And then, you know, when they're just about done wiping them out, then they suddenly regret it and want to restore them again. So the great lesson to us here is that it's all too easy to just go off your emotions and what seems right at the moment and act as seems right to you, rather than consulting God and asking him what you ought to do. But just following their own ideas and their own thoughts about what's the right thing to do leads Israel into a mess and leads into a lot of murder and violence and death, quite frankly. And it would have been much better if they'd treated God like their king and asked him what he would have them to do. And the same thing can be true in our lives. When we, instead of consulting God and his word to find out what we should do, we just do what seems right to us. Well, it often leads to a mess, just like it did with Israel.
Yeah, very true, Nathan. We all need to learn to look to God's word to guide us, not to rely on our own thoughts concerning what's right and what's wrong.
Yes.
Yeah. Most of our listeners know that after completing the book of Judges, you went on past Judges and did a study in the beginning portion of 1 Samuel. Would you remind us why you did that?
Well, as I explained it when we did that, Bob, the book of Judges ends, but really the rule of the judges continues through two more judges recorded in the book of 1 Samuel, who are Eli and Samuel. And I talked about the fact that Samson kind of started the mission of the 12th judge because it says he started to deliver Israel from the Philistines. But judges weren't supposed to just start to deliver Israel. They were supposed to deliver them. And yet that final delivery waited for Samuel, who really completed Samson's mission. So I wanted to take us through those last two judges and see the completion of that mission and the last judge before God raised up the kings. And that was the next stage in Israel, was under the kings.
Okay, well, what are the lessons that you'd like your listeners to get out of the lives of these last two judges?
Well, first of all, Eli, he was the high priest and the judge at the same time. And he's a sad example of what can happen when people choose to honor their wicked relatives rather than God. His sons, well, he's a righteous priest. His sons are wicked. And when he makes them priests, they totally dishonor the Lord and dishonor his sacrifices with outrageous conduct. He finds out about it and he scolds them and tells them to stop doing it, but they don't. And yet he's unwilling to do anything else about it. He's unwilling to remove them from being priests or punish them as they deserved. After all, their family. And in spite of the fact the Lord comes to him and says to him, you ought to have done something about this. The Lord is furious with you. Well, he just won't. He won't do anything against them because they're family. Well, in the end, he loses his life. His sons lose their lives. And God curses his family for generations to come because of his choice, choosing his family over God. And the same thing people can do today. Choose your family over God. Well, when you do that, I guess you think it's going to benefit your family. But Eli really shows us it didn't really help his family at all. I mean, maybe he thought by not taking care of his sons, he was doing them a favor, but really it just brought more trouble to his family down the road. And understanding that choosing God over family is really the best thing for your family. And setting the two against each other and deciding I'm going to choose my family over God, it just leads to disaster, not only in your life, but in your family as well. So I think that's a big example from his life. And then Samuel is a great example of faith and of living a life in communion with God and walking with him faithfully to the end. A lot of our heroes in the Bible have some black marks against them, and Samuel is one of the rare examples of a man who really doesn't, other than the fact that his sons after him are not such good judges and they took bribes. So maybe we could question his parenting skills a little bit, but other than that, I mean, Samson is a great example of living a life in communion with God from the time he's a child till through to the end of his life. So an example of how we'd all like to live serving God from childhood to the end. So a great example there. And then Saul finishes off. He's chosen as the king after Samuel. He's a sad example of one who started with faith, but then when his faith was tested, God told him, wait a week, and then Samuel will come and tell you what to do. Well, he didn't imagine how bad the week was going to be, and he decided he just couldn't wait. And so he failed at the test of faith. And so he lost the kingship, and that leads into the faithful, godly King David.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of interesting material to study in 1 Samuel. Can we visit this book in the near future?
Yep, I'm planning on coming back to 1 Samuel at some point, Bob, and, awesome. And we'll look at these things in more detail. Absolutely.
Good. All right, Nathan, now that we've wrapped up the book of Judges, what are your closing words for our listeners concerning the study in this book?
Yes, well, I think we should learn to have faith in God, like some of these judges did, like Gideon did, like Samson did, and like Samuel did, right? To learn to trust God, to believe him, to put faith and confidence in his words, even recklessly like Samson did, that's a good lesson for all of us. We should trust God, and we should trust his judgment. Israel didn't trust his judgment about wiping out the Canaanites, and yet God was right. It led exactly to what he said it would lead to, them becoming just as wicked as the Canaanites. We ought to learn to make him our king rather than just following our own whims and judgment. And that means getting to know his word and getting to know what he would have us to do. So I think those are all important lessons for us to learn from the book of Judges.
Well, thank you, Nathan. I hope all of our listeners can benefit from these things and from the study of the book of Judges. But now that we have completed the study, what's the next thing that you want to study to help our listeners to know God?
Well, next I want to go into a very difficult study, Bob, and that's the study of the difficult why question. And that's a question I think we all have to face at some point in our lives. And that is that since we, and I hope most of my listeners, believe that there is a good God, oh, there a God of love who loves us, and the creator who made this wonderful world we live in, and it's a beautiful, amazing creation he made. And yet, why, this being the case, when we look at the world of humanity on earth, why is this world so often full of wickedness and chaos? Why is there so much sorrow and heartache and pain in the world? In other words, why, if there's such a good God, do such awful things happen?
Wow. Well, this is quite a question, Nathan. I'm sure many of our listeners have experienced a lot of painful things in their lives and would like an answer to just that question. How do you plan to tackle such a hard topic, Nathan?
Well, I think I fully realize, Bob, that there is no easy answer to this question, and there's no just one statement that will explain it all and solve all our questions. So instead, I think we have to look at the problem from many different angles to get some ideas about just why the world is the way it is and the way we see it.
Well, that makes sense, Nathan. What are some of those angles that you plan on looking at this question with?
Well, first of all, I think we're going to go back to the very beginning when God created the world and God's creation of mankind on earth and say, how did God create this world? Did he create it to be as it is today, or did he create it with something else in mind? And we're going to discuss who is really responsible for the mess the world is in today. Is this how God mapped it out to be? That's what a lot of people seem to think when they ask that question. Or is the world seriously off track from what God intended? We'll consider the question of whether or not God determines and is ultimately responsible for every sad thing that happens, for every terrible thing that happens. Did God cause and plan out every tragedy? Is he responsible for every bad thing that ever happens? We'll consider that. Then we'll consider why God has allowed wickedness to go on for so long. I mean, I think we all believe that there is a powerful God who could do more about the wickedness and more about the pain and sorrow in the world than he is doing today. So why hasn't he done more before now? Why has he allowed wickedness to go on for so long without acting to bring an end to it? We're going to look at the final fate we're all looking at for our lives, that is death, that's coming for all of us. And it seems like such a final thing, an ending to everyone's life. And yet what hope does God offer? What hope does he hold out in the face of something that seems to be so final and so terrible? And then finally, we're going to consider the wickedness of this world, the wickedness of humanity. A lot of our problems are caused by death, and a lot of them are caused by natural disasters, but the fact is a lot of them are caused just by wicked men. A lot of the pain and sorrow and heartache that goes on in the world is wicked people hurting others and hurting the innocent and hurting children and those who can't fight back. And what is God going to do about all this? How is God going to deal with it? Is God ever going to do something to stop the wickedness in the world? What's God's plan? What's he going to do about this terrible situation we find ourselves in?
Well, that's the question I want to ask. What is God going to do about all this?
Well, sorry, Bob, but you're going to just have to listen to the Why Question series to find out.
Okay. Well, all right, Nathan. I know for one, I will be looking very much forward to hearing what you have to say about the Why question, just as I hope everyone else does.
Yes, Bob, and I look forward to the series too. You know, as I was recording a lot of the episodes in this Why Question series, I had some people I knew have a tragedy happen to them. For one thing, there was a young family where their little 1.5-year-old boy drowned in a swimming pool. Extremely tragic, and I actually spoke at his funeral. So certainly that was even as I was recording these Why Question episodes. So I'm sure there are listeners in our audience who are going through things a lot like that, and they're asking the same hard questions my friends were. And so I hope I can offer some help and some insight.
Well, I know you will, because I remember when we first went on the air, you did a 5-lesson series on the Why Questions. Yes. And now you're new version of this series is a little bit more expanded, and so I encourage our listeners to listen to this. This is going to be a very encouraging and a very interesting lesson that you have in store for us in the future.
Yes, and I certainly hope and pray they get a lot out of it and a lot of help and understanding.
Awesome. On our next program, Nathan will begin his Easter teaching series with Crucified. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that as you know God's Word more, you know God more. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. We also offer a weekly email newsletter in which Nathan does the same thing he does on this radio program, going verse by verse through the Bible and then discussing what it means. Email Nathan at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org and ask to be placed on his mailing list. You can also write to us with Bible questions or comments. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org or write to the Word of Truth Ministry, P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. Although your donations are always appreciated, you will not be solicited for funds in any way when you write, so feel free to contact us. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. So long for now. We look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.